we're doing Ein Haya. And
wait, where's the mic? He wanted to learn this.
The Rav Kook is writing about Gemara that describes that when a person has light with him, so then the demons can't approach him. If you have a big torch with you, it's as though there are two people there. If you have a full moon, you have a lot of light from the moon, it's as though there are three people there. And then the Gemara asks, when we say a torch is like two, that means two plus the individual, or he and the torch are like two? So the Gemara says, well, once you said the moon is like three, so then there's no point in having four. So if the moon is like three plus him, then you'd have four. You never need four. You do need three.
Why?
Because the Talmud tells us that demons, if there are two people there, the demons might appear, but they won't harm them. If there are three people there, they don't even show up. So you never need four. Once you have three, they don't even show up. So from here you understand that when we said a torch is like two, it means the torch and him are like two. And the moonlight is like three. That means he with the moonlight is like three total. Because you never need four. So that's
the
Gemara's answer.
Him, the torch, and the moon are three.
No, without the torch. Him, when there's good moonlight, is three. Him and a torch is two. Okay? So that's the Gemara. Says Rav Kook. Mitziut kol advarim anifalim ba'olam. The existence of different things that happen in the world, as our sages taught us with their godly wisdom, it's that the existence of things is a living existence. Our sages taught us that when we speak about things in this world, we're talking about living things.
Use an example with a pen.
Let's hear him out. And the reasoning behind this system, that the world is alive, is because the fundamental concept of creation is so that all of creation can be affected by the light of Hashem and Hashem's benevolence. And the only one who can accept Hashem's light and benevolence is those who are living. Because when one is living, then they recognize their own existence. Then they can recognize the good that's in the world. And therefore, there doesn't exist anything in the world. The lowest level you'll go to, there doesn't exist something that doesn't have some life to it. Because Hashem created a world for life. And so everything that's in existence has an element of life. It doesn't matter how low you'll go. We could explain this in many different ways, but let's hear the concept. Now, it's not only the forces that act for good in the world. Also the forces that act for evil. Because at the end of the day, they are also a creation of Hashem. So they also have an element of life. We don't say that they're only evil and they're only death. No. Every force that was created has an element of life. So that means even that which is evil within the world, at the end of the day, has the potential and perhaps the responsibility to make the good better and more sophisticated.
What's an example?
To make the good better.
No, like even evil has life to it.
I could say, but I'm scared that it will be me talking and not Rav Kook. So I'd rather hear him out, and then let's see.
I could say your opinion.
I don't give that much value to my opinion. I
just need to understand.
Let's hear Rav Kook. I'm saying it's very dangerous when learning Rav Kook to add interpretations, because then you could take Rav Kook in every direction.
Mm.
I much rather try to be pure to the words and see within the text what Rav Kook is saying. This concept, though, is a recurring theme in Rav Kook, that even the evil that we see in the world has a task to make the good better, to make the good more sophisticated. When we see things that seem bad to us, we should know that those things that are bad are not intrinsically bad. They are challenging to the good, and they force the good to become better. They force the good to become more sophisticated. If the good is sophisticated enough, then the evil doesn't win. The good wins, but the good has to become better in order for the good to win.
A man told me once, the good is the evil for the better. Everything is good. It's good. Everything is good. But it's a very strong point to say, no, that's not the end. We have to go even to better. Yeah. So the good is the evil for the better.
Yeah. So this is exactly Rav Kook writes in other places. He says, things have to continue evolving. They have to get better, more sophisticated and better. Good is not good enough. Good is not good enough. There has to be a... It's a very important point in all of life.
I like that concept.
This is also an important concept as to how we view evil in the world.
So that's interesting, or the beauty to see that he says we need the evil to elevate the good to the better. And it means that's the only option, or is it one of the options, whatever.
This is what he said so far.
Yeah, very nice.
Because there is a concept of kindness from above that wants to satiate the world from its good. And that means we have to make it possible for that to happen. Rav Kook takes this here, he'll give us an example. He says, if there is a need for evil or bad to come to the world, it comes through life as well, through living organisms, because Hashem gives life to the world. And even that which can affect in a negative way does it through life. Hashem is a source of life. And that's why when diseases come to the world, so there are living organisms that bring diseases to the world. It could be a virus, a living virus. It could be other forms of diseases. At the end of the day, they are living as well. And in that sense, they have that pleasure of being a part of life. Even though they cause death, even though they cause negative things in the world. But whatever Hashem brings to the world, Hashem brings through life. Because these things cannot cause the cessation of life in something greater than themselves. They can't live through that. They will ultimately die, the virus or whatever it is. But they have a period of existence, and at that period of existence, they have that pleasure of being alive. And this is the way Hashem runs the world. At every place possible, at every moment possible, Hashem is giving life. And even the death that Hashem brings to the world is through life. It's through living organisms. And therefore, when we speak about a higher world, a world of concepts, when we take things from being a concept to being a reality, so then even ancient philosophers said that the original cause, they wouldn't talk about God. They spoke about the first cause. That is what takes man's thought from being a thought to being a reality. We think, and then we act, right? Mm-hmm. Where do we have that power from? What's the battery that keeps us moving? We discussed this earlier tonight. I don't think you were there in the Ramban's class. There's constant life in the world. We can, through science, we can have a certain understanding as to what is happening. We can understand how a baby develops in his mother's womb, right? We understand. A baby at 6 weeks is not yet the size of a ping pong ball. You guys got that? 6 weeks. And he keeps doubling in creating more and more and more cells. It's a phenomenal thing that happens. We don't understand where that energy called life comes from.
What is life?
Oh, that's another good question. But even if you can't identify exactly what it is, which we would say life is the soul.
That's
the soul
right
is what gives life. Okay, but what is the soul? Is it salty? Is it sweet?
No, the answer is you can't define life.
Oh, so coming back to here, we would say life is an extension of the Ribon Shalom.
It comes
from
that, and that's what life is.
Okay. Hashem gave a breath of life. Hashem gave life. Hashem is that force which gives force to the world. Life is... Let's leave that hanging. We have different definitions for life. One definition of life is the ability to affect. The Maharal writes, life is the ability to affect. When something has the ability to affect, that's called it's alive. The more it can affect, the more alive it is. That's why we say tzaddikim don't die. Their impact continues in the world. But again, there are different elements of life. So the early philosophers understood that there has to be a first cause that gives life, that gives the ability to us to take things from concepts to reality, what we would call life, to do something, to impact the world, to take a thought and make it into a reality. So Hashem, who is the foundation of the world, who is also the kindness of the world, and he gives us the capacity to not only think, but also act. So then Hashem also gives us systems within which to act. And when we look at the world, we see life in small things and not only in big things. Every leaf that grows on a tree is also life. Every blade of grass is also life.
Plastic
and you'll ask
life.
Me, why is that blade of grass important? Why does God give life to that blade of grass that grows? Maybe no one sees it and no one eats it and it just shrivels away. There's a leaf that grows on a tree and you don't see why that leaf is important. Is the world a different world without that leaf? But no. Hashem says, I created a world where Hashem says, in His benevolence, He affects the world by giving it life. And so the world constantly gets from that benevolence, from that life. So, if this is true in a place where things seem very simple and unimportant, like blades of grass or leaves on trees, so then certainly where life can have a much greater potential, the human being, where his life can be a life of wholeness, so there certainly Hashem is imparting upon him that life. And so our sages taught us that when we look at reality, when we look at the world, we have to see life in everything we see in the world. Because whatever you see came from Him, blessed be He. So that means it's also a receptor of the life He gives in the world. Today it's easier for us to understand it. Today we know that the molecules are alive. We know that the atoms are moving.
Science hasn't gone deep enough.
today, as far as we know, there's energy in everything.
They've broken atoms down into threes, but they haven't gone beyond that. And
but we know that all of that is living. Today we know what Rav Kook described as a philosophical concept. Today is much easier for us to understand. We know there's energy here. We know that a tiny particle can create E equals MC squared, right? The tiniest particle can create a great explosion because of all the life that's in there, all the energy that's within each particle, right? So there's a lot of life. There's a lot of energy. There's action going on in everything in this world. But again, Rav Kook was describing a spiritual reality. In his days, I don't think anyone knew what we today know. But he was describing the spiritual reality. So when there is an organism that's alive, but it doesn't sense its own life, so then that organism loses its value. Part, Rav Kook over here is saying another concept, which you can't argue yes or no. He's saying a spiritual concept. They once asked Rav Yontan Eibshitz, how could it be that the stone outside the shul doesn't answer Kaddish? Everyone's answering Kaddish, sanctifying Hashem's name. Why doesn't the stone answer Kaddish? So they expected him to say, they wanted to see his response. They expected him to say, a stone doesn't have a mouth, it can't answer Kaddish. He said to them, does a stone have ears? How do you know it hears the Kaddish? You're assuming it hears, so you're to ask me why it doesn't say. Who said it hears? Rav Kook is saying that everything in existence is not only alive, but it has a recognition of its own life. Rav Kook is saying that this spoon knows that it's alive. That's not the way we would look at the spoon.
No.
But that fits with the Medrash that says that every blade of grass has an angel that says, grow. That fits with there are many stories of people who were sitting by their teacher and they plucked a leaf off the tree and the teacher looked at them in horror and said, how could you do that? And the student says, what did I do? It's not Shabbos. What's wrong? And the teacher said, that was life. You just ended the life of that leaf. Why would you do that? So we would say, what's the big deal? Here, I'm plucking grass, right? So what did I do? What's the big deal? Rav Kook is saying, no. Everything that's alive has a certain sense of its being alive. And if something doesn't have that recognition, then what's the point of its existence? Hashem created so as to give life, but also so that what receives life would have that appreciation of the life it was given. So wherever it's possible that one would have a sense and appreciation of the life Hashem is giving him, Hashem makes that available to them. Hashem wants not only to give life, but for the life to have an appreciation that it's alive. This is similar to someone who gives over a big factory which has many branches, and the factory produces many things, and if you would tell every worker to do as much as you can, so then he could manage with 1,000 workers. But if he would tell each worker, I want you to sit here, and I don't want you to stop working. I don't need you to maximize your potential all around the factory, but I need you to maximize your potential in this job. Then you could fill the factory with 1,000,000 workers, because each one has a designated role, and in that designated role, he could continue working nonstop. If you tell a worker, look, right now I want you to do A, and then later on B, and then later on C, and they're all going to run around the factory doing 1,000,000 jobs, so then you could get all the jobs done with 1,000 workers. But if you're going to tell each worker, I want you to stay man this port and keep doing this nonstop, then you might have 1,000,000 posts to fit. So then it depends on how you want your factory to run. If you say, I need the factory to support me, the factory is here for me, I want to make money, So then I only want to hire 1,000 workers. Let each worker run around and do a million jobs. And then I'll manage with 1,000 workers and I'll make more money. But if my whole point is making money, so then I will also hire the cheapest labor. And whenever I can have a machine do the job, I'll take a machine. I won't hire a person. Whenever I can have the work done automated, I'll have it done automated. And it's only when I need to, I'll hire a human being. And then the person will be happy because they'll make a living working in my factory. But if I don't need the factory, if the owner of the factory really is not making any money off the factory, he doesn't need it. He benefits nothing from what happens in the factory. But his whole point is he wants to give people employment. He has that factory so that he can employ as many people as possible. He wants people to be able to earn their wages respectably and not just receive charity. And he doesn't want people to waste away and receive free food and be lazy and sit at home and get free food. He says, no, I'll be happy to support you, but come work. So then he's going to divide the tasks. He's going to hire a million people to do the work and tell each one, you man that post and you man that post. Because his point is not the profitability of the factory. His point is, how can I get as many people as possible involved in this factory? And if he could take a machine where he could otherwise employ someone, he would look down at that and say, of course I want to hire someone. That's the whole point of this. I want to hire as many people as possible. Says Rav Kook, Hashem created a world. And Hashem, blessed be He, made the world with so many creatures. You can't count how many creations there are in this world. What's the point? Hashem says, I want them all to benefit from being in this world. I am going to share with them my benevolence by creating them. So my point in creating this world is not efficiency. If it was about efficiency, so it's like the factory. I'll only hire 1,000 people, and wherever possible, I'll have my angels do it. I'll have it on autopilot. Who needs man? Who needs grass? Who needs animals? Who needs all these living organisms? Why do there have to be bugs and spiders and fleas and ticks and everything else? I don't know. Because every one of them is part of the recipients of the benevolence of Hashem. So wherever possible, Hashem says, I want to make more life. And that's why it's not enough that when we speak about forces of good, like one's thoughts, one's mind, it's not enough that there be life there. We say there are levels of life. There's a neshama, a soul. There is a malach. There is orot, different types of lights in the world. There are nitzotzot, there are different sparks, spiritual sparks in the world. There are concepts in the world. Hashem creates a world where there are causes, where there are effects. Hashem creates a world where we can perceive life and we can enjoy life. Each one on his level can appreciate the life that Hashem imparts on the world. And each one on his level can appreciate his task in this world. And this is how Hashem's kindness is affecting the world. So that each one can feel, I'm a part of life and I have an important role in this life. Now when we speak about the forces that Hashem gave room for in the world, one of the forces is our imagination. And our imagination can go in a negative direction and a positive direction. And they are all, as Rav Kook began with, they are all a part of the life Hashem gave to this world. And as we said before, the negative is to make the positive more sophisticated. How come if you have a filter on your computer, there are still things that can get through? How come you have filtered internet and yet on Facebook you can get all kinds of things and in your email you can get all kinds of things?
Designed that way.
You can be more sophisticated in being good. As Rav Kook said, the negative is in the world to force the positive to be better. to force the positive to be more sophisticated. The negative forces us to grow. And so Hashem gives His kindness and His life to the world, even in the creation of Shedim, which I don't know if Rav Kook is going with the opinion that they're live demons or they're imagined demons. Two opinions among the commentaries, whether
mental
there's a
illness,
real...
Right. Physical illness.
Or I don't even know if I would call it illness. I would call it...
bad energy.
That's if it's something that exists. It
but
could
you're saying
be...
everything has life, so everything exists.
Right. It exists in that sense, but... Shedim, according to one opinion, is all in one's mind.
So that's mental.
Right, but I'm not sure it's illness. I'm not sure that every time a person has a fear or a person...
Some people can drive themselves mad. They weren't
right
to begin with.
Right, but I'm not sure shade is a person going mad. Like we learned in the Rambam earlier tonight, there are scenarios where every person would start hearing people talking. It's not so simple to remain sane under certain circumstances. A person in solitary confinement can start hearing voices. A person out in the desert can start seeing mirages. You don't call that insanity.
Well, you have a seichel.
It's not always so simple within the seichel to know what voices I'm hearing that are real and which are not.
Can you give an example?
You've never woken from a dream only to be uncertain as to whether the dream was reality or reality
today,
is what
my brain told me. I remember going to sleep, and as real as the dream was, I woke up.
Sometimes, and sometimes you wake up and you're not sure. Wait a second, where was reality? What's real? At least it happens to me. I wake up. It takes me a while before I shut the alarm clock because I'm sitting there thinking, "What day of the week is it? Is it Shabbos? Am I allowed to shut the alarm clock?" I sit there thinking. I don't shut the alarm clock. I sit there thinking. Can take me 10 seconds, 20 seconds, can take me a long time to remember. I'm saying some people are sharp. I have relatives who you could wake them in the middle of the night and they're sharp as a fiddle. Everything you'll talk to them about, there's no such thing as for them not being sharp.
That's what I'm like, so I don't understand what it's like.
But not everyone's like that. I'm telling you, I wake up and I don't know. I don't know.
Is that more peaceful?
It's not, no. My grandfather passed away and I dreamt he was alive. And the kids woke me up and said, "Abba, what time is the Levaya?" And I looked at them and I said, "Who's Levaya?" And they said, "Saba." And I said, "Don't talk that way." And they're looking at me and I'm saying, "Why are you saying Levaya?" I looked at them and I'm saying, "Why are you talking about a funeral?" I looked at my wife and I said, "Did Saba pass away?" She looks at me and she says, "Before you fell asleep, you were preparing the Levaya." And I sat there thinking and I said, "You know, you're right." But it took me 10 seconds because in the dream that I was back taking care of him. And when I woke up, I didn't remember that he passed away. I didn't. I was sitting there looking at the kids like, "Why are they talking to me about a funeral?"
Out of mind.
I'm saying that in the mind, that to start discerning what was a dream and what was reality, it's not always clear.
People learn how to strengthen keeping themselves grounded in reality. Tamid?
I don't know. Obviously, I haven't. I think it's also a factor of how tired you are when you go to sleep. I think it's not just a question of different people. I think it's also a question of, do you go to sleep when you have enough energy that you can retain your focus? But coming back to Shedim, the Rav Kook is saying, if we understand this concept, that Hashem created a world where He imparts His kindness, He imparts His life. So there's an existence of Shedim, whichever existence we'll talk about. There's an existence of Mazikim, some kind of being in the world that does harm. Maybe it's viruses, I don't know. There's an existence of angels that do harm. So Hashem created all these different things that can harm. But at the end of the day, they are creations that Hashem, blessed be He, created. And Hashem does good. So Hashem created forces which also were given life, the capacity to do things, and those forces are His creations. So a person has to know, says Rav Kook, that when a person tries to establish his mind in its pure state, when a person tries to establish his traits so that his traits are right, when a person tries to establish his thought so that his thought is correct and honest and he figures out what's true and not, well, during all these processes, he is trying to tap into life. When we try to become better people, when we try to become purer people, when we try to discover truth, we are trying to tap into the life that Hashem created in the world. We said that life, well, life includes concepts. Life includes the light and the wisdom that Hashem makes available to man. And so we have a challenge. And what Rav Kook is about to write here is also in the Chazon Ish. We are attracted to our imagination. Man has a natural attraction to lies. We're attracted to it.
We're tempted to lie?
No.
It's a possibility.
If someone wants to tell you a story, you want to hear it. If you're standing at the checkout counter and there's a tabloid there and it's saying, woman gave birth to boy with four eyes.
That's curiosity.
You read it. You know it's a lie. Doesn't matter. Maybe not, right?
But that's the
like point. I say, we're attracted. People are attracted to lies in their own speech. We want to embellish what we say. We have a very hard time telling a story exactly the way it happened. We are attracted to lies when we listen to things, when we look at things. It's interesting.
People, some people aren't. Some people get disgusted by lies.
If you say so. I haven't yet met those people. If you say so. I don't know. Says Rav Kook, when a person is attracted to that, he is also being attracted to a form of life. To a form of life that, as we said, Rav Kook began with the concept that Hashem gave life to the negative as well. The negative forces in the world are also alive. The viruses are alive. The illnesses are alive. What plagues a person is also a form of life. But what a person is doing is he's saying, I am going to become a receptacle. I'm going to be available to tap into those forces. But, says Rav Kook, the fundamental concept is you're always connecting to life. It can be life in its positive sense. It can be life that affects negative. But it's all life. Just as we understand that the cat that comforts you is alive, and the snake that can bite a person is also alive. They're both alive. The forces that impart good onto the world are alive, and the forces that impart negative onto the world are also alive. Rav Kook says it's all because Hashem is the source of life. Hashem gives life. The way Hashem acts in the world is through life, living organisms.
That's also in the spiritual world.
Yes.
You speak to snake and so on.
I'm giving examples from the physical world, right? But Rav Kook is the yeah. Yes.
It sounds almost Spinozian. Like what you're saying,
yeah.
It's almost Spinozian. It's like a very thin line
there. Agreed. Let's see.
Okay.
There is no action that is devoid of life. It can be the greatest actions, the spinning of the earth. It can be the smallest action, the beetle closing its eye, the biggest or the smallest action. It can be the earth which we don't sense its movement. We're on earth right now. You don't feel like the earth is moving, yet there's life there. And that life works within a system of wisdom, a system of consistency. And being that this is how the world works, So then it also affects the most trivial things in life. Even when something decomposes, mm-hmm. that's also life. Yeah. Even when a body is consumed by vermin, that's also life. When a virus overtakes the body, that's also life. It's the living virus that's overtaking the body. So Hashem works through life. And in this world, we have Hashem's life acting in the world. And that's why we have choices of what life we will tap into. We need to try and connect to things that are as close as possible to the truth, as much as we can. The more we connect to things that are true, the less our imagination and lies can affect us. And here I go back to our story in Ireland. You weren't here, so I'm going to tell you the story again. This is a true story. And the lesson from the story is phenomenal. I apologize to those who already heard the story. There was a man, we'll call him Jack, whose car broke down. And it was a very foggy, rainy night. You couldn't see anything. And he couldn't figure out how he was going to get anywhere. He was standing in the rain and the fog and trying to figure out what he could do. And no cars were coming. And then suddenly, in the middle of the midst, he sees headlights approaching. And he waves and he waves. And the car seems to slow down. He runs to the car, opens the door, jumps in, closes the door. He says, "Thank you. Thank you so much." And he's sitting there, and as the car is moving slowly, he looks and he notices there's no one there. There's no one to his left, there's no one to his right, there's no one in the passenger seat, there's no one in the driver's seat. He's looking there and he starts shivering as he watches the car moving. And the car is heading down the road, and there's a turn in the road, and he's watching, and he's starting to tremble.
Is it a real story?
Yes. Yeah. And he looks at the car moving, and as the car approaches the bend in the road, a hand reaches in through the window and turns the steering wheel. And the car continues moving. A hand. And he's standing there and he's praying. He doesn't know what to do. And he shuts his eyes and he tries pinching himself. Maybe this is all a dream. It can't be. This is for real. And he's trembling and he can feel his heart pounding and he's breaking out into sweat. And the car is moving and he's looking around and there's nothing there. And ahead he starts seeing the lights of a diner. And as the car is moving, he says, I'm not going to die like this. This is not going to end. This is not going to happen. He opens the door and jumps out of the car and runs into the diner. He runs into the diner and everyone's there eating, drinking. And he smashes the door open and runs in. And everyone looks at him. They think he's drunk. And he stands there and he starts sobbing. And he says, "You won't believe what just happened. You guys won't believe what just happened." And he starts telling them what just happened. And the people, the diner falls silent. And he's standing there in the middle of the diner sobbing after he just told them his story. And he's standing there weeping. And after a few seconds, as the whole diner is silent, a door opens and two people walk in. And they look at him and he looks at them and he doesn't know them. And then the two people turn to one another. And one goes to the other, "Jeb, you recognize him?" And he goes, "Yeah." He says, "Jeb, it's him, right?" He goes, "Yeah." The people at the diner say, "How do you know him?" And he looks at them and he says, "How do you guys know me?" So he looks at him and he says, "Jeb, that's the jerk that as we were pushing the car, he just jumped in, sat there for the ride, and jumped out." Now, that story is so important because ask yourself, if you were the guy sitting in the car, what would you be thinking? It's so easy to
I wouldn't have been in that situation to begin with.
Of course not.
Classic.
Your car doesn't break down.
Hands don't come in through the windows. Right. Cars don't move by themselves. You want to believe in stuff without checking the facts first.
It was a foggy, spooky day. You're stuck in bad imagination.
He gave us a brain. Like, if we can't, if the brain can't answer it, okay, then maybe something crazy is going on.
I think if Rambam were in that car, Rambam wouldn't be nervous. He would say, "Okay, Where's the remote control here? Who's playing the game here? Would not, because in Rambam's mind, they don't exist. There are no demons. And this cannot be happening. So explain to me what's going on here. Rambam would look at it and say, I'm sorry. What's going on here? Who's playing the prank?
But there are two aspects to life. One is the one that we see, and one is the one that we don't see.
Oh, so Rav Kook says, part of our duty in life is to connect to the truth. The more we connect to truth, the less lies can come in. The less deceit can come in. The more man works on purifying his mind to connect to true concepts, to what's right, the less he can allow, the less shtuyot can come in. I'll read you the wording of Rav Kook. Al ken ra'uy la'adam liot mishtadel. That's why a person should work. She'ikanes tziyur ha'mtziyut b'nafsho. That the way we perceive reality, the way our soul perceives reality will be ba'ofen ha'yoter maskim el ha'emet kefi she'efshar lo. As close to the truth as possible. Again, there's something very comforting about lies. If I can believe in lies, so then somehow I can believe in a lot of things that are comforting. But if I can connect to the truth, shebaze lo yeh makom lekochot ha'sichliim ha'matim vekochot ha'dimyoniim la'atbi alav pulatam, then our imagination and the different thoughts that can affect a person negatively won't be able to touch him. Rabbi Akiva is thrown into a dungeon by the emperor. And the emperor hires women of ill repute to come and seduce him. And Rabbi Akiva sits in the dungeon, and he spits to his left, and he spits to his right, and he spits to his left, and he spits to his right. And every time these women try to come and seduce him, Rabbi Akiva spits in their face. And finally, in the morning, the emperor calls in the women and says, "Did you get him to sin?" And the women say, "He's not human. We're professionals. We can seduce anyone. And he's not human. I'm sorry, he's not made of the same matter." So the emperor calls in Rabbi Akiva and he asks him, "Tell me, what's wrong with you? Are you not human?" And Rabbi Akiva says, "Oh, I felt like there were two carcasses of rotten animals approaching me. I didn't feel like there were humans approaching me. I just was not interested. They smelled like carcasses of animals." Because Rabbi Akiva doesn't look at them as pieces of flesh. Man who is not connected to the truth, man who is on a base level, looks at that and says, "That's steak, that's dinner." Ah, we don't say it's dinner, I'm using a euphemism. But a man could be attracted to that. There were Tanaim and Amoraim that if a woman came, right, Ternesrophus' wife came to seduce Rabbi Akiva and he spits. She says, "Why'd you spit? Am I not beautiful?" He says, "You're flesh. You're flesh and blood." He marries her in the end. But after she converts to Judaism, after she becomes a person worth marrying, he bursts out laughing when she walks into his room without clothing. But that's because Rabbi Akiva was connected to the truth. So that's not interesting.
I don't know the story.
It says that when she came in, he spat, he laughed, and he cried. So
he spat out of disgust,
he spat,
laughed out of pity.
He laughed because he understood that she would ultimately convert and marry him. And he cried. He didn't tell her why he cried. Because he understood what the end of both of them would be.
That beauty, like the ones will end up eating.
What? I don't know that it's recorded.
What do you mean? He would cry because why?
You want? I'll look up the Gemara. Let me not work by heart. Let me look it up. But coming back to here, I brought it as an example. Rav Kook says, the more a person fills his perception, his reality with the truth, the less room there is for nonsense to come in. Guys asked me a year or two or three, I don't know, a number of years ago, is it permissible or prohibited to have a TV at home? So I said, I don't understand. Where do you have time for TV? There are orphans in the neighborhood. Who's working with them? There are hungry people in the neighborhood. Where do you have time for that? What's the question?
If your kid has a hard time reading, you can get a TV and put on the same stuff.
Okay, so that's another question. You know, when I was dealing with my grandfather, I said, let's bring him a television. person that's bedridden, person that has different needs. Yeah, sometimes it's a tool that's worth using. But for a normal, healthy person, where do you have time for that? Coming back to Rav Kook, so Rav Kook says, we have to try. What's fitting for man is to try and suffuse himself with things that are as close as possible to the truth, to what's right. And then his imagination can't affect him as much. We all have imagination, and we're seduced by it. Now, man was created with a nature that he is a social animal. Man actually connects to society. And in order for man to live life, he needs a community. He needs a society. So even though it could be that when a person's all alone, his imagination can go to all kinds of places, and he can decide that they're true. And by the way, this is very dangerous. I always tell guys when they leave Machon Meir, take roommates. Don't live alone. People who live alone become weirdos. You live alone? Get a roommate. You heard it here first. The danger of living alone is that what I say goes. I'm right. You don't like it? You got a problem. I'm right.
I could tell the difference between between living alone while working at a prison for the criminally insane and not having roommates. when a couple of my good, really best friends came in and started living with me, I could tell the difference in myself. I felt like I was
a
better head on my shoulders when that happened.
For sure.
Yeah.
And you rub shoulders, it forces you to be different. Uh-huh. And so a person in his own mind can develop systems and can develop codes of behavior, and everything makes sense to him and he thinks that it's right. But when you suddenly have someone else in your life, suddenly your friend tells you, buddy, you're wrong. You can imagine things for yourself alone. You can't imagine them for your friend. And so when you try to explain to your friend why you're right, and your friend says, no. Well,
where are they coming from that they can say you're wrong?
It depends. Because they don't have the same imagination you do. Unless it's a cult, so long as a person thinks for themselves, you won't reach the same conclusion. So if you work together, that's why two people can reach the truth, because we work together. I'll argue my point, you'll argue your point. Society forces us to work together to reach something that's closer to the truth. If I live alone, so I can reach my own conclusions and there's nothing to check me.
That's a rule. A man cannot come to the truth by himself alone.
Like, it's hard.
I'm saying you can use books and stuff, but without a person.
I wouldn't say it's only that way.
You can learn from people.
I would say it's dangerous and it's hard to get to the truth. And it will be hard for a person to verify if they got to the truth. Because many, many people are walking around and they'll tell you why they are right and the rest of the world is wrong. Mm-hmm. It's one of the dangers of the tshuva process. In order to begin the tshuva process, a person has to go against the norms of society he's living in. And then it's very easy to continue the process by going against the norms of every society you're in. And that's how you end up with very weird balei tshuva. Because why should I ever conform to anyone? I'm right. They're all wrong. I can stay up all night and learn. I could down vasikin and learn. I could do a million things. I'm right. Why do I have to conform to anything?
You don't need people. I'm saying you can use this book. This guy's right. And 10 others are also right.
How does anybody know that they're right?
This is wisdom.
Okay, when you work with other people, so then your friend is going to start telling you, hey, I don't think that's right. There's a benefit to doing A. There's a benefit to doing B. I think you're losing by doing C. I didn't hear you. Right, but when we're alone, it's easy to fall into the trap of.
I don't understand like how you got from what I just said to what you did.
What did you say?
Because
I brought the basic function of thinking to be doubting your own thoughts.
Even that.
Also, that we. So there's two of us inside, and we're constantly disagreeing with each other. That's already two.
But it's not. And again, even doubting oneself. is it's not a question of doubting, it's a question of getting to the truth. It's not a question of doubting, am I right? It's a question of getting right.
So if you're doubting that you're right, you have to let people
agree. If you ask other people, then you're not alone anymore.
You have to live with them.
Okay. Fine. Okay. Rav Kook is talking about a person who's completely alone. When a person lives alone, then they can find themselves spending much more time alone and much more thinking alone, and that's where a person could end up this way. When Rav Kook spoke about living alone, he didn't mean renting an apartment alone. I'm saying that when a person rents an apartment alone, so then it can also fall into that trap, and that's something we see all the time. That people,
it's easier to sin when you're all by yourself.
I'm not talking about sinning. I'm talking about what type of bachelor is a person when he's lived with roommates for the last 8 years, or when he lives alone for 8 years. After living alone for 8 years,
you're very you and stubborn you.
Right.
It's your way.
Okay. I can't judge you. I'm not interested in judging you. I'm saying the... Okay, fine. I'm saying... So, when the Gemara said that demons don't affect two people, says Rav Kook, that's because demons are a function of your imagination. And when you have someone else there, your imagination can't run wild. You're going to say, what was that? And I was sitting next to my wife and suddenly I heard a rustling. So I wanted to make sure there wasn't a rat there. She said, no, that was just the wind moving the wrapper of the matzahs. Okay. But if I were all alone, I'd be looking for the rat. What moved? I didn't see the cellophane moving in the wind. Wait, there's a rat in the house. Okay, your imagination can't run wild when there's someone else there. You ever been alone in a house at night, all alone at 3 a.m, not sitting in front of the internet? Okay, so then your imagination can go places. It's harder.
You can guide your imagination. You can be in control of where it's going.
Okay. So that says Rav Kook, when the Gemara says that having two people, demons can't affect them, that's because your thoughts can't run wild. But at the end of the day, someone sitting next to you, and you think that right now the rustling was a snake passing next to your leg, the fact that someone's sitting next to you does not preclude what you thought you just saw or sensed. And sometimes you can get really scared, even though someone else is right there next to you. Because just because your friend says, no, that rustling was the cellophane of the matzah wrapper, doesn't mean you're convinced by what he said. You could say, no, I think there's a snake in the house. But at least your friend will cause you to doubt that maybe there isn't a snake in the house. When there are three, then two people will tell you, buddy, there are no snakes here. That's the cellophane moving. And then you sort of have to give in. You're not going to say, no, I think there's a snake. So that, says Rav Kook, that's what the Gemara means, that when there are two, then a demon can show up, but he won't harm you. Because in your mind, you'll say, I think there's something going on here. My friend thinks there isn't. That's enough that the thought won't harm you. If there are three people, says Rav Kook, then it doesn't even show up. Because when you start saying, hey, what was that rustling noise? Oh my gosh, there are snakes in the house. Your two friends are going to say, you need sleep. There are no snakes in the house. That's the rustling of the cellophane wrapper. And you're going to listen. It's going to be different than when it's my word against his word. Because there are going to be two others. That, Rav Kook says, is the pshat, that when there's one, then they appear, but they don't harm. When there's two, they don't even appear. That's part one of this piece of Rav Kook.